Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. I'm Kenneth Amadurian, and I have a very timely guest on the line with me today. We're going to be discussing mining, metals, bullion, what's going on in the market, how the coronavirus is impacting the economy, how it's impacting the mining sector. And to do that today, we have a legendary industry expert, mining expert, Keith Neumeyer, known for his success and leadership in the mining sector, founder of First Quantum Minerals, CEO of First Majestic Silver, also the chairman of First Mining Gold. We'll get his thoughts on all of this today. Keith, thanks so much for coming on Crush the Street with me today.
Well, it's been a while, Kenneth. It's great seeing you again. And yeah, it's timely in this crazy market we seem to be in.
Yeah, I was looking at the last time we did an interview. I think gold was $1,300. And unfortunately, silver was about the same. So we're going to talk about that today. But I'd like to start off with, you know, the extraordinary circumstances we're in right now. The coronavirus, you know, what's going on with the economy, this pandemic. I mean, how are you and how are things? And, you know, what's your take on what we're seeing right now with this drastic change the whole world is seeing right now?
Well, you know, you've heard from many others, not just me. You know, we're in very unprecedented times. You know, I turned 60 years old on Monday, and I've never experienced anything like this before, you know, in my lifetime. And I don't think anyone on the planet's ever experienced anything like this. You'd have to go back, you know, pre-World War II, or, you know, or even earlier into the 20s, you know, in late 20s, early 30s, to really experience the kinds of things that are going on in our communities. It's quite shocking. It's quite sad to see, actually. And, you know, it's fortunately here in Vancouver, where I'm at currently, we've had great weather for the last couple of weeks. We've been self-isolating. I've just come into the office. I'm in the office right now. We've got a skeleton crew of people. Most people are working from home. But we've got a beautiful city, and you know, I'm going for walks every day, and you know, the restaurants are closed for the most part, but you can at least walk up to them and order food and walk away with your food. And they're actually serving beer and wine now, which is kind of nice. You can actually order yourself a glass of wine and take it away with your food, you know, in a plastic cup. So it's not all bad, but you know, to see some of these small businesses you know, struggling the way they are, and some of them may not just come back. You know, it's you know, a lot of these small family businesses are you know, hand to mouth, and you know, for 30 or 60, 90 days of no revenue, I'm not sure how many of these companies are coming back, and it's pretty sad to see. As I said, you know, on the metals side, you know, on the mining side, you know, we're going to be okay getting through this. As far as I'm concerned, you know, gold and silver, they're really the only places to be in this current environment.
Keith, let's talk about the government responses to the coronavirus. You know, in your opinion, are we seeing an overreaction, underreaction? I mean, right now we're having record unemployments here in the U.S. The second week in a row, we saw over 6 million people filing for unemployment claims. I mean, we're going into a depression based on these unemployment figures, despite the trillions of dollars that are getting injected into the economy. A third of renters in apartments did not make their rent for the month of April. And again, this just happened. That's what's so shocking about this whole event, is how quickly the whole economy went from seemingly booming to just an economic grind. It didn't take few months, this happened in a matter of weeks. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, I think we're going to be looking back at this time, you know, a year from now, or maybe, you know, longer, maybe, you know, probably for the next decade, we'll be, you know, looking at how the government's reacted in this particular circumstance, and really, you know, thinking this through for the future, because, you know, this is going to happen again. You know, some of the research I've looked at, you know, regarding the SARS epidemic, you know, hit three times, you know, over a period of about 18 months. It first showed up in the spring, which is, you know, very similar to COVID-19. Then it disappeared. Then it showed up again in November. And then it disappeared again and showed up again in March. So it actually showed up three times over a period of 18 months, as I said. And, you know, there is some research that suggests that the COVID is going to be acting the same. So this could go on for some time, but you know, governments can't keep businesses closed for that period of time. Already they're destroying, you know, small businesses, which is really unfortunate. Most governments, the government of Mexico, for example, is not giving any financial support to business. Canada's trying, you know, they do have programs in place. We all know what the United States is doing with some of the programs they put in place, but governments can't prevent everyone from going bankrupt. It's just not possible. So, you know, the bigger players, you know, will get their loans extended, you know, the big retailers, the Walmarts, the big corporations will be fine. And actually they might even come out of this better, because it'll probably create some distress in some smaller companies that they've had their eye on for quite some time. So, you know, this could result in a lot of M&A activity over the next, you know, 12 to 24 months, because guys are just, you know, can't, you know, pay their debts or can't pay their bills and so on. So, you know, probably, you know, it's a bit of a, you know, almost 2008, 2009 scenario where, you know, you had the banks bailed out and you know, they were able to take advantage of that and become bigger than they are today. You know, you might see the similar type of thing happen where, you know, you get a lot of small industries or small companies wiped out and you know, the bigger players are the ones that take advantage of it. And, you know, at First Majestic, you know, we're looking around, you know, we're known for, you know, being pretty aggressive on the M&A field over the last 18 years since I put this company together. And you know, maybe something will fall into our lap as well as a result. But I do think the governments have overreacted, in my view. I'm from Vancouver. I'm in Vancouver. You know, it's beautiful blue skies. The we're walking around. We're enjoying, you know, the environment we're in. But, you know, we're not New York. So, you know, maybe if I was in New York or Hong Kong or one of these other cities that are being, you know, hurt dramatically by this event, maybe I'd have a different opinion. But you know, I think that, you know, we really have to come up with some real policies and procedures on how do we deal with the next epidemic.
I think there's going to be books written on crisis response based on how we responded to this and the whole world shut down and literally trillions of dollars that are being destroyed in this moment. You know, this is something we'll tell future generations about, which is, again, such a shocking thing. And again, so quickly, it happened so fast on a turn of a dime. So Keith, the last time we did an interview.
Just on that topic, you know, I was in the grocery store last night and, you know, the vegetables seem to be pretty available, which is good. We're not seeing vegetables being depleted, but you know, going through some of the aisles, you know, some of the normal things that you buy, you know, like ketchup or, you know, canned, you know, whatever. I was looking for some spicy sauce that I normally buy on a regular basis. It was gone. And I noticed, you know, a good 30% of the shelves are just void of products. And I remember my grandfather telling me he was in World War II and he drove a tank for the Canadian Army in World War II. And he was telling me that they ran out of butter in North America. And they started using avocados as a replacement for butter, and which is kind of, so I'm looking around this grocery store thing, and this is all came to, you know, my mind at the time, and I'm thinking, you know, how are we going to have to change our lives? You know, what things are we just simply not going to be able to buy anymore as a result of, you know, all these supply chains just disintegrating in front of our eyes?
Well, you brought up the grocery stores. I want to get into precious metals right now. And I think it's interesting about what's been going on with even toilet paper. You know, I don't know how much of that is a real supply shortage. Obviously, you know, you go almost anywhere, it's not even available. But it's become self-fulfilling now where, you know, if anyone sees toilet paper on the shelf, they're going to grab it. Now it's become just, it's perpetuated. The momentum has picked up and we're seeing the precious metals start to move higher. I know silver has seen the spot price stuck in the teens here, but man, premiums are up higher than we've seen in years. So the last time we did the interview was $1,300 gold. Silver was about the same spot price. Let's get your thoughts on what we're seeing in gold first, and then we'll move on to silver. Obviously, we're seeing some disruptions in the futures markets. There's a lot of demand that's coming from this panic. What are we seeing in gold, and what do you expect to happen as we go a few weeks out, a few months out, and maybe a couple years out?
Well, you know, it's a big question, obviously, and, you know, being a bull of both gold and silver, you know, I think that this, you know, this is a perfect storm. You know, if you go back and look at, you know, the last, 10 years of my interviews, you know, we've been always predicting some kind of, you know, major financial calamity similar to 2008, but, or 2009, but on a bigger scale. And you know, we've been waiting for that, pin, you know, to prick the bubble. We didn't know what the pin was, but the bubble was going to get broken regardless. And it just happened to break, you know, very quickly, and, you know, and saw the major markets, you know, fall as they did, and they dragged down gold and silver. And gold's now recovered, of course, but, you know, silver hasn't. We can talk a little bit about that as we get through this. But, people are realizing that, you know, the governments are not going to stop printing money. You know, they put themselves into a corner, and, you even got Canada now printing money, which has never happened before. They actually, for the first time ever, the Canadians, Bank of Canada, went into the bond market and started buying bonds. They've never done it. The United States has been doing it for decades, and it's part of their normal course activity. But so government after government is starting to follow some of these Japanese, some of these U.S. Types of policies. And so what does that mean? That means we're going to be a wash of currencies no matter where you are on the planet. And that means you must own gold. And I think gold's your safe haven. It's the only place to be. Of course, the gold equities, but, you know, don't forget, gold equities are stocks. And so they do get impacted by major negative moves in the overall major stock market. But they are the first to kick return, I think. And they did do that in 2002, 2003. They did that again in 2009 and 2010. And I think we'll be seeing that happen as well over the next couple years.
So, Keith, in this crisis that we've seen, this massive sell-off in stocks where there was rush for liquidity, rush to safe havens, did you feel that precious metals did their job in this environment? Or, quite put differently, are you expecting more from gold and silver here in 2020?
Well, when you say they did their, yeah, I think gold definitely did its job. Gold's the granddaddy of currencies, and gold is a currency, despite it being a precious metal, but it is our primary currency that all governments need and use for trade and support of their foreign accounts and so on. But silver has disappointed me. Silver got caught in this copper trade. Copper went from, you know, the mid twos, you know, 250, 260. It looked like it was going to break $2 there one day. I think it got down to 203 or 205. I saw it trading down to, and I was in. Actually, bought a couple of copper stocks that day, crossing my fingers that copper wasn't going to break through $2, which it didn't. Now it's back up to 2.25, and you've seen silver, you know, come off its lows as well. You can't, unfortunately, you know, these are paper markets, you know, they're not physical markets. So, you know, they're very much financial vehicles. So you can't really rely on, you know, looking at those daily moves in the paper market as the real price of the metal, but it is an indication. But I still believe that silver, you know, is going to outperform gold in the next couple of years, but definitely gold has taken its lead role, which it should do. So it's done, as your question is, it's done everything it should have done.
Sure. Well, and let's acknowledge the fact that we're seeing premiums at the highest level we've seen, you know, in years, maybe ever. I don't know the true answer to that question. Maybe you do. But with regards to premiums in this environment, silver is doing pretty good. Gold is doing well. And there's even rumors about bullion dealers ripping people off in this panic environment. And being that you're in the mining industry, producing silver, and kind of what you're seeing from your perspective, is there truth to that where bullion dealers are ripping people off, or is it simply a function of supply and demand?
You know, there's the issue is if you know you go back 5 or 6 years, and even us, even for you know First Majestic sells, you know, you see the picture behind me, you know, all these coins and bars. You know, we sell this on our website. Now we've been selling this stuff on our website since I don't even remember, you know, 12 or 14 years. And you know, back you know when the metal prices were rocking and rolling back in 2010, 2011. We, you know, we were probably selling 100,000 ounces a month, and off of our website. I'm talking about. So this is just e-commerce, retail investors, mostly shareholders. And you know, we weren't really doing it to make money. We're doing it just, you know, for the fact we want our investors or shareholders to have some silver that we actually produced ourselves, and we've never really viewed it as really much of a profit center. Over the last 5 years, silver sales on a monthly basis have dropped down to only 2 or 3,000 ounces a month, and so there's been very little interest in buying, you know, retail silver or gold products. So the inventory at all these, you know, dealers has been quite low because no one wanted it to have hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars sitting in inventory at some retail shop in small town USA. Or you know, you walk into the main coin dealer here in Vancouver, you know, 2-3 you know, years ago, you know, you'd be the only guy buying metal, and if you wanted to buy, you know, a substantial amount, you wouldn't get it because, you know, because they, you know, would have to phone up the Bank of Canada or the Canadian Mint and order it for you. It was available, you can get it, but you had to wait a few days to get it. And that was just a function of these businesses not wanting to have a huge amount of their dollars sitting in an inventory that doesn't sell. Now all of a sudden you get all this demand, and all this inventory gets blown out of the water over a period of a week, and now no one's got inventory. So where's the inventory coming from? It's coming from the miners. So you know, I could tell you that there's no one in no mint in the world that has $12 silver. Because what happened was the mining industry didn't sell any silver at those prices. We didn't sell any silver at those prices. You know, when our quarterly financial statements come out in the next month or so, look at our average selling price for Q1. It's north of $17 an ounce. We haven't sold any silver since $17 an ounce. And we're not intending to sell silver at current metal prices. So we'll just hoard it. There's no point. And other mining companies are doing the same. So if the refineries aren't getting the metal to produce into these retail products, then why would they be selling their inventory at $15 an ounce silver or even give it a couple of dollar premium at $17 an ounce silver when their inventory costs them actually $18 or $20 an ounce because they were buying silver in their inventory just 6 months ago at $17, $18, $19 an ounce, plus fabrication costs of a couple bucks on top of that. So their costs for their material that they're holding in their stores, in their storage facilities, has a cost much higher than the current spot. So why would they sell you silver at $15 or $17 an ounce and take a loss on it? A lot of these companies can afford not to sell it. Of course, some inventory will trickle in, you know, due to financial reasons. People can't hold out, people need cash, and so on. So there will be limited amounts of metal coming into the market at these prices. But for the most part, the value of the inventory in the system is so high that it won't come out at these prices. If we have $15 silver for the next 6 to 12 months, then okay, then the miners will be forced to start putting some metal out to the market, and the cost, these premiums that you're referring to, will slowly come down because the average cost base of the inventory that's in the system will start to come down just due to do with the mines finally starting to sell some metal into the system.
Keith, I know some bullion dealers are concerned about their business having a product to sell if we do get into a panic and there's massive shortages. And this is kind of a follow-up to what you're saying. Is this a reality going forward here with, you know, countries around the world ordering their mines to shut down. I mean, you made me aware of Peru, Chile, Argentina, shutting down their mines and the impact that's having on, what, 25% of the annual silver production. So that's a pretty big deal here. So maybe you can follow up on that with the reality of these shortages getting more extreme here in the next few weeks, potentially.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this all, you know, comes to play. Mexico's now offline as well. And so Mexico is the largest producer in the world. So you actually have about 50% of the world's supply of silver now offline. And you know, to turn it back on, it doesn't happen overnight. But at the same time, you know, industry apparently, and this is why the silver price dropped with the copper price, industry is apparently not buying the metal because they don't have any products to manufacture, to sell, and so on in the supply chains. And, you know, everyone, all your listeners know the issues. But, you know, I can tell you from our perspective, you know, we're, you know, the second this happened, you know, 2 months ago, the first thing we did was look at our supply chains. And then we made some strategic moves within our company to expand the warehouses of certain strategic products. I'm not going to get into too much details, but you know, a product that, for example, we would normally have 3 months supply of in our own warehouses, we expanded that to 6 months supply, and we contacted all our suppliers and we put a program in place to identify all their strategic components and to make sure that all the supply lines were in place to supply these components within the business. You know, you can't tell me that Sony and Samsung and Tiffany and, you know, Toyota and all these companies are not doing the same thing. So it'd be stupid not to. So I'm sure, and I don't have inside information, obviously, but I'm just a business guy, like, you know, so I'm assuming this is occurring, that they would be buying up these strategic components within the televisions, within the, you know, electronics that they consume. You know, not only is the price of silver pretty good, if they could convince someone to sell them, you know, a year's worth of supply at, you know, $15, $16, $17 an ounce, I think they would be buying it. So I don't really buy into the whole demand side of the equation just collapsing overnight, because, you know, these are big corporations that are looking long-term, and if they can get copper or silver at, you know, prices that were much lower than they were 6 months ago, why wouldn't they do it? They'd be stupid not to do it. So I think we have a supply issue, not so much of a demand issue.
When it comes to the supply demand, the long-term fundamentals for silver, do you see the industrial supply being what pushes silver higher, or is it going to be the monetary side, this problem in the financial system that really gives silver the interest and the demand that comes from many, many people?
Well, I've stated this before many, many times, that there's no relationship between supply, demand, and price. You know, it's just it's an unfortunate fact of life. You can't tell me that, you know, the silver demand changed by, you know, 30, 40% in a matter of 2 or 3 days. Or copper, you know, or whatever, you know, oil prices, for example, you know, these aren't supply demand driven markets. These are headline driven markets. So it all comes down to sentiment. You know, when that sentiment changes, you can never really know. But, you know, you go back to 2003 or 2010, you know, when you see sentiment change away from, you know, the NASDAQ bubble of 2000 or the real estate bubble of 2008, and all of a sudden there's a rush of money in real assets, you know, like gold and silver, and every institution on the planet wants to have exposure in the mining sector, because, you know, they view it as, you know, safe for whatever reason they view it as, then the sector is so small. You know, the entire silver sector is $16 billion. Value, total worldwide silver industry, the value of the silver industry is $16 billion. You know, how many times does that fit into Apple's market cap? You know, if you have, you know, 6,000 institutions that all of a sudden want to have a small piece of silver in their portfolio or small piece of gold, whether it's equities or the real metal, you know, what's that going to do to the GDXJ or the GDX? You know, you're talking about, you know, 100, 200, 300% gains or even more than that. And that we've seen it before, and we're going to see it again.
Keith, I won't keep you for too much longer here. I want to ask you about First Majestic. How has the coronavirus impacted First Majestic in this environment? You've alluded to the government ordering the closure of mines here. Can you speak to this a little bit?
Yeah, it's tough, right? You know, we started off, I think, pretty proactively, you know, putting, you know, once the Canadian government came out with the protocols about distancing, wearing masks, you know, washing your hands, using anti-vac on a regular occasion, you know, don't touch your face or be aware of, you know, touching your face. Don't, you know, shake hands and, you know, do the normal kind of hugging and kissing that, you know, people normally do in Mexico. You know, we put a stop to all this stuff quite early. We haven't had a single case of COVID in the company, whether in Canada or Mexico. We've had a couple of flus, which we've, you know, were concerned with, but they turned out not to be COVID-19. So, but, you know, people are sitting at home and people are concerned about their wages. You know, there's a limit on how long any business can pay their employees for, you know, staying at home. We're crossing our fingers that, you know, come May 1st, the mines will be back open. And so far, we're not getting any indications that that's not the case. You know, we're strong. You know, we're a very strong company. We got over $140 million in the bank. You know, we could survive for, you know, quite a lengthy period of time, you know, without any production. We're not looking forward to that, obviously, and we don't want to do layoffs. If we have to start layoffs in May, if this process continues or calamity pandemic continues, we'll likely have to start doing some layoffs. But we're hoping that doesn't, you know, we don't get to that.
Sure. Yeah, this is a different environment, right? I mean, there's something between a recession-proof company or even a depression-proof company, but we're dealing with the pandemic, right? You know, I've been trying to get a haircut now for a week or a couple of weeks, and I know this isn't going to be an impossibility. You know, I won't let my wife touch my hair, so I'm going to look like a mess for the next month or so. So we'll see how that goes. But Keith,
I don't think you need a haircut yet. You're looking
not yet. touch on obviously this is a crisis environment, and obviously the impact on the employees. I mean, you know, my heart goes out to them, and I know that's difficult on a company. I mean, we're all being impacted by this one way or another. And but talk about the opportunity for miners in this environment. I mean, this is kind of what we've been hedging for, you know, a problem in the system, this bubble that's been created and this bazooka that's hit the economy. There's going to be a transfer of wealth from these financialized assets into hard assets, real assets, resource stocks. So I think there's a real opportunity here. And maybe you can address this as well here as we close out this interview.
Yeah, sure. You know, First Majestic has proven itself to be pretty opportune. I put the company together 18 years ago, and I built it by buying, you know, distressed assets, assets that could not be financed, you know, assets that just ran into difficulties whereby we thought, our technical team thought that they had higher value than what the market was pricing them at. And, you know, we were opportunity in taking out some of these companies. And I'm not going to say that's going to happen in the next 3 to 6 months, but we've always got our eyes open. And, you know, we're looking to take advantage of this situation as best as we can. You know, what that means at the end of the day, I can't tell you because, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, but we always are working on it. But, you know, from a market perspective, I think that the pundits out there, you know, are looking for a V-shaped rally. And this buy the dip mentality that has been in place for a decade has been a really good profitable trade. You know, and a lot of people have made a lot of money buying the dip. And, you know, it happened in 2018, or V-shape, happened in 2016 and or 2015, another V-shape. But I think people are getting fooled. You know, I think, you know, people should go back and look at the 1929 stock chart from 1929 to 1933. And it's a pretty interesting stock chart. We had a major crash in 1929. And 70% of that crash was eliminated through a major rally that took place over the 6 months after the big crash of 29. And then after that, in early 1930, basically 6 months later, you went into a three-year bear market where the Dow Jones dropped 80% from 1930 to 1933. You know, similar to the NASDAQ, you know, we had 5,000 NASDAQ in February 2000. And over the next 3 years, we had an 80% drop in the NASDAQ from early 2000 to late 2003. And a flat line for a decade. It didn't move again for 10 years. And I think that's kind of the environment people should be looking at. I think these big, you know, indexes around the world, it's some selling opportunity. And people should be looking at getting into the silver and gold space. Gold did quite well in the 1930s in the United States. Gold and silver did quite well in after the major calamity in 2008-2009, when we saw gold and silver prices rally to their all-time highs in 2011. That's what I'm expecting. So, you know, look for this not to be a V-shaped rally. This is going to be a long, you use the word depression. Whether it's a depression or recession, whatever it is, we're not going to know what it is until we leave it behind us. But I think this is a 2 or 3 year market issue that we have. And as I said earlier in the interview, I believe, at least for my dollars, the only place to be is in the gold and silver market.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll see here in very short order as to what the unemployment looks like. If the US has 30 million, 37 million people unemployed here in very short order, I think we had 16 million just in the last 3 weeks that have reported. Yeah. We'll be in a pretty deep depression, and that's with trillions of dollars of help. So, yeah. Keith, it was a true pleasure.
Those jobs aren't going to come back right away. You know, employers are going to be very cautious, about rehiring. Of course, there will be some rehiring, but I think as of this morning, based on today's number, I think there's a total of 17 million layoffs in the last 2 or 3 weeks,
right?
And there's more coming. I've heard some of the big retail chains in the U.S. are actually today or tomorrow, prior to Easter, are doing major layoffs as well. And I think by the end of March, there'll be more. So this is going to take some time to get through this whole process.
100%. Keith, it was a pleasure having you on Crush the Street. Thank you so much for your time. If people want to learn more about you, your companies, please let them know where they can go and, what they can expect to find.
Sure. Well, we didn't get a chance to talk about First Mining Gold, but I'm the chairman of First Mining Gold. They've got a pretty unique portfolio of gold development assets. The stock was trading at, all-time lows. So have a look at that. Some interesting things going on there, just www.firstmininggold.com. And then, of course, the First Majestic, pretty easy company to find. One of the more prominent silver companies in the space, www.firstmajestic.com. I'm on Twitter, Keith_Neumeyer. Look me up. I don't do a lot on Twitter, but, every once in a while, I send some interesting stuff out, including your stuff when I see it. I often send your stuff out.
Thanks, Keith. Appreciate your time. And we'll have the links to in the description area for the companies, your Twitter. And appreciate it. Really, this is such a unique time in our history. And we'll be talking about 2020 for years and years to come. So it's a great time to catch up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, people are interested in buying some physical. We still have some inventories left. We've only got 1/2 ounce rounds and 1 ounce rounds left now. We've sold all our keto bars and five ounce and 10 ounce ingots, they've all gone. We've been told by our mints that it'll be anywhere from 6 to 12 weeks, depending on the mint, where we use two mints and before we can get replenished supplies. So once we run out of these 1 ounce and half ounce rounds, which will probably be another 2 weeks maybe of supply at these current sales rates, they'll be gone for the next 6 to 12 weeks. So anyways, just to let your people know if they're curious about buying some.
Absolutely. We'll appreciate that. All right, Keith, thank you so much.
Okay, great. Good talking to you.